From the clouds of the highest mountains, from the corners of the earth, two men have traveled leagues to bring you welcome to the Eagle Boys, Drew Ladd and Nick Huber. Overkill.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Eagle Boys. Once again, my name is Nick.
My name is Drew.
And today we have a very, very special guest, one that we have both been very excited to meet, talk to, and have on our show. We have the voice of the God from Halo Multiplayer and, might I add, the beautiful voice behind our new and improved intro, Jeff Stitzer. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, guys.
Of course, of course.
So we're
just going to jump right in.
Yep. To kick this off, I wanted to ask you, how did you get into being God in Halo multiplayer?
Well, I wish it was a really exciting answer, but the real simple answer was I got an audition. It was really that simple. You know, the way I explain it was, I think I was driving around one day and my agent called and she said, you've got an audition out at Microsoft, where I'd done a couple of other games at that point. Can't remember what they were. I think one was called The Russian Front. Another one was called Motor City Madness, something. I think a gambling one as well. She said, you got an audition out at Microsoft Studios. I said, great, what's it for? And she said, it's a new game they're working on. I think it's called Halo. And it was like, oh, okay, great, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it could just as easily have been, you've got a commercial for, you know, toothpaste.
Yeah.
Because nobody, remember, it's so hard to sort of think this way now, but nobody knew what Halo was until it came out.
That's a wild concept to me.
Even the people working on it didn't anticipate that it would succeed as well as it did. Marty O'Donnell has said, and I think it was 80,000. He said, if we move 80,000 units, cartridges, you know, that would be a big hit for them. It's like, well, then you really overachieved, didn't you?
Because it was definitely an overkill.
I'll say that.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, I just went to the audition, and the way they auditioned the women was all the women read Cortana, and then they also screamed like they were being murdered by
Oh.
And the guys all read Master Chief. And I am pretty sure that I read an alien, but I don't know who it was. And then also, you know, had to scream like I was being destroyed. And everybody had to do the screaming part at the end of the audition because they didn't want everyone to sort of like shoot their wad in the beginning of the audition.
Yeah.
You know, there's a long line of people. Marty O'Donnell, who was doing the game, of course, had come from Chicago, and he loved Chicago because there were so many actors there. It's a great theater town, tons of amazing actors, and he had heard good things about Seattle. So he wanted to cast as much as possible from Seattle. I think in the first game, he did. Later, you know, they would go after celebrities and bigger names and stuff, but initially it was almost all Seattle folks. So I went in, I did my audition. It was great. A couple of days later, I love to tell this story. Marty disputes it, but I don't care. I get a call from my agent saying, congratulations, they want you to do Master Chief. And I went, oh, okay. Again, I don't know what that is.
Wow, I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I went, okay, great. I said, well, when are we going to record? And she said, I'll let you know. Time passes. I'm not hearing anything. All the local folks in Seattle that I know that are doing the game have already gone in and recorded their stuff. I've been hearing this through the grapevine. So I get in touch with Jen Taylor, who is, you know, lives in Seattle, as do I. And I said, have you gone in to record yet? She said, oh, yeah, I finished all my stuff a couple of weeks ago. And I go, oh, well, this this isn't good. So I called my agent and I said, hey, would you check with the folks, you know, at Microsoft? Because we haven't heard anything about my going in. Is there a problem? She says, I'll get right on it. So she calls me back later that day, said, well, I've got good news, I've got bad news. I went, The bad news is that Marty, you know, because he didn't know me from Adam, he liked my audition, but he was reluctant to actually have me do Master Chief. He wanted to work with somebody he had worked with before, which was some guy named Steve Downs, who was in the Chicago area.
Yep.
And it's like, I went, oh, okay. Again, not knowing what this was, it was like, this happens all the time. You know, where you think you're going to get something and they say you're going to get something and then it falls through for whatever. You know, you get used to it and it's like, whatever. She said, but the good news is they want you to be the announcer for the game. And I'm thinking, oh, I've done announcers. That's not really all that exciting, but I guess. Okay. And then, of course, the day comes for me to go out and do the announcer. And the first thing we do once I get into the building and I've been taken around to meet all the artists and see all the work they're doing on that first game, I saw a Halo months before anybody else did. Had no idea what I was looking at. It's like, here are the weapons and here's the, you know, the gear they're going to be wearing. It's like, oh, that's great. You know, oh, look pretty cool. But we went into record and Marty said, okay. He said, can you do like Monster Truck Rally? Monster Truck Rally. I can do that. So I did. He says, all right, now pull that back a little bit. And he said, what was that alien you did? And I went, oh, yeah, he was a little bit more like this, wasn't he?
That's awesome. Back
to the
That's
Monster
gnarly.
Truck Rally. And
that's cool.
So we just, you know, did a little of this, did a little of that. And before you know it, you know, and it was only about 20 minutes, I think. I don't think it took any longer than that, if that long. Then he said, okay, I think we got it. And I went, okay. So we then proceeded to record all the things we had to record for the first game, which is the most I think I've ever recorded for any of the Halo games. And when it was all done, it was like, okay, that's it. I think we're, you know, we're wrapped. And it's like, great, thanks. And I went my merry way and didn't think another thing about it.
So what
I got the call.
What were you doing before Halo? Because you said that you had an agent. So we're... Like, are you like a voice actor? Is that what you were doing before Halo as well?
Well, I do a lot of things. It's always kind of amusing to me that, you know, people don't understand that Halo is like one of the smallest things I do.
Oh, okay.
What? Yeah, I'm a professional stage actor with almost 50 years of experience behind me, including work at regional theaters all over the country, all the theaters here in Seattle. I've been on Broadway twice. I was in Inherit the Wind with Christopher Plummer and Brian Dennehy some years back now. And I was in Mary Poppins on Broadway for a year and a half, playing the bank chairman and Admiral Boone.
Very
Barely
cool.
Disposable characters, but hey, you know, I had a great time.
How did I not know any of this?
I know either.
Done a little film, done a little TV. I had a recurring role on the reboot of The Fugitive some years ago with Michael T. Williamson. I was in his task force. It's been about a year and a half now. I did a Netflix film written and produced by the guy who did Game of Thrones, D.B. Weiss, and seriously, blink and you'll miss me. I've done national commercials. I've directed plays. I've directed 180 professional productions all over the country. I've done audiobooks. I've done corporate narration. I've even modeled, unbelievably enough.
hey, you gotta give yourself some credit.
That's great.
I had the career that I would say probably 90% of the acting pool in the country has, which is you try to work as much as you can for as long as you can. And that's kind of what happened. I had the agent was specifically for voice work. Seattle is just not big enough to have an agent, you know, to handle your stage work, because among other things, you know, that's not how they cast. The voice In voiceover, what tends to happen is that the casting people get in touch with the agent, and they say, this is what we're looking for, and they may ask for you specifically, or they may say, can I see, like, your three best people or your five best people or whatever it is, and if they decide that you're one of the people who should be seen, then you'll get a call saying you've got an audition, it's due tomorrow, you know, you've got to record it these days from home, which was not the way it used to be, but it is now. And then you submit it generally back to the agent or to a Dropbox for the casting people. And that's what you do. But I did a lot of stuff like that. I've done hundreds and hundreds of commercials, narration, done a lot of stuff.
That's amazing to hear. Just to go off of that. So, like, not talking about Halo, we'll get into that in a second. But, like, as far as, like, your non-Halo work, what was your favorite work that was non-Halo related?
It's weird because I've liked the majority of the things that I have done, and it's hard to talk about any of them being a favorite. There have been a couple of plays I've directed I'm particularly proud of.
Yeah.
In various situations. I have to say that I am always so happy, or have been so happy, when I was in rehearsal, and I love meeting new people. I love finding like-minded people who have the same enthusiasm and passion for the work that I do. So, I mean, I've got friends that I've made over the course of, as I say, 50 years that I'm still very much in touch with. Some of them ended up going off and becoming reasonably famous, and many more did not, but, you know, they're still very, very close. I love doing both Inherit the Wind and Mary Poppins. Inherit the Wind was an okay production. I don't think it was necessarily, you know, spectacular. There were some issues with it. We had two guys, both of whom basically wanted to play the showy role, and one of them, Brian Dennehy, chose to accept the less showy role, one that he was in some ways maybe not entirely right for, gotcha, because he wanted to work with Chris Plummer.
I see.
And, when the play was originally done on Broadway back in the 1950s, it had a cast of 50 people. That's a play, not a musical, a straight play. You will never find that.
Yeah, I'll say you don't really see that nowadays.
Absolutely not. Anywhere. But, I mean, you don't see that, you know, when I was directing some years ago, I mean, it was not unusual to have a play that had 23 actors in it, and that's just inconceivable now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's actually funny you say that you were part of theater, because my brother and I, many, many years of our lives, same deal, we were a part of theater for our high school. We did, like, local productions and things like that.
He was in show choir as well.
We were in show choirs for our schools and things like that. We competed and all that stuff. But that's actually a very interesting fact that you were on Broadway. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I love the folks at Mary Poppins. I didn't think it was a great show. But, you know, again, the people working on it were amazing people, just spectacular.
Beautiful.
So talented. I mean, there was a level of talent and skill. When you work with those people, you go, right, that's why they keep showing up time and time again on Broadway. They're that good, you know, and you think, you know, everybody has imposter syndrome. So you think, so why am I here?
Yeah.
But, you know, I was thrilled to be there. I've enjoyed working at many of the regional theaters that I've worked at. They've been super. So I don't really, I mean, it's not a case of having a specific, like, a lot of favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I loved playing Ebenezer Scrooge in a production locally of Christmas Carol.
Very nice.
I loved playing one of the main characters in a play by George Bernard Shaw called Miss Alliance at San Diego's Old Globe Theater, just because I love the play so much.
Yeah.
That was generally, you know, what kept me happiest was being in good plays.
I love it. I love to hear it. Just bouncing off of that question, since I asked you about your favorite before the Halo days, what was your favorite of the Halo days? Like, which one of the games was your favorite to work on?
Well, I think I'd have to say the first one, but only because, you know, it was, we didn't know what we were doing at that point, right? So as I said, you know, we had to find the voice. That was great fun to do. Once I'd found the voice, didn't have to do that anymore. Although every time I'd go in to do one of the games, they'd say, do you want to, we've got this, you know, queued up so you can hear yourself, if you want to hear yourself, you know, just to remind yourself of what you did. Because it was often, you know, 4 years between games.
Yeah.
And I would sort of go, okay, although I never felt like I needed to do it myself. Although I think I know what I'm doing, but sure, if it makes you happy, I'll be happy to. And so I listen to myself and I go, that's pretty much what I thought I was doing. Okay, great. And then we, you know, go off and record a little bit. It's a weird job because, as I say, it was years between games.
Yeah.
So you kind of almost forgotten that you are doing it. And then you get the call. It's like they want you to come in for the new game. And it's like, cool. Oh, that'll be fun. You know, and the other thing that a lot of folks don't realize is that apart from the people I knew locally, who I never worked with on the game, they all went in individually to do their work, just as I did. I didn't meet Steve Downes until the last game in 2020.
Really?
I tried to. Because I've got lots and lots of friends in Chicago, and I was visiting one in particular, and she said, oh, I know Steve Downes really, really well. And I said, well, can you hook us up, we can all get together, so I'll try. And it didn't happen, you know, and another time it didn't happen. He was in Florida, which is where he spent half the year. So it was like, just kept missing each other. And at that point, I wasn't doing any conventions. I didn't have an agent for it at that point. That's only been over the last couple of years that's been happening. So I never got to see him. I knew who he was, you know, but, and then once I did get to meet him, it's been delightful.
Oh yeah.
You know, to hang out and chat and stuff at conventions and yeah.
Very
and
nice.
And I see him all the time. I've directed her a couple of times in plays.
Very nice.
Wow. I wanted to know about your work with Bungie and 343. What was your favorite part about working with these companies? And is there one that you gravitated more towards than the other?
I would say yes, and I'll tell you why. Bungie, when it first started, was a small-ish company. And in fact, one of the interesting things was almost every time I would go in to do the next game, they'd be in a larger, you know, building than they had been in for the one before. It just kept growing with each game. But throughout all of those games that we did up until they left, which I think was after Halo Reach, right?
Yeah, I think it was Halo Reach.
You know, they were all there. So you'd go in and the sound designer was a good friend of mine, Jay Wineland. You know, and I knew his wife. I directed his wife in a show. And so, you know, and Marty, I knew. And it was always great to see him again and a bunch of people. So it was always that group of people. It was like visiting relatives in a weird way. And they had, and you went to them to a specific place. Then what happened was when 343 took it over, it was a very different feeling. You know, not like horrible or anything. It was just different. You get the call. It was almost always different people for every game that I went in for. It'd be like, you know, because the guy who was in charge of the voice acting for the fourth game maybe did the fifth game, but wasn't there for Infinite. He might not have even made it all the way through five. I can't remember. But, you know, it was just weird. And then you'd go to different studios, but it wasn't the one studio that you associated with the group. And it would often be different people who were recording you because Jay and a lot of the Bungie folks went with Marty to work on Destiny. And of course, we all know how that turned out.
Yep.
I mean, we don't really know exactly why it turned out the way it did, but it did. And so it was a very different feeling. Everybody I've dealt with has been great. I love the folks at 343. They could not be nicer. It's just I don't know any of them at all as well.
Was it more of like a corporate feeling to you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So it wasn't as you didn't have like interpersonal connections to these people. So it was just different. It was more felt like more of a job, like a JLP.
Well, and the other thing is that a lot of, I think they're based down in LA, 343 is. So, okay. You know, a lot of that stuff would happen. And I would hear somebody from Los Angeles talking about the things we were doing, you know, on occasion. And it was like, oh, okay. You know, but it was weird. They weren't there. Other people were there from from Microsoft. So in that respect, it was a little bit different, you know. I mean, there's stuff going on now. You know, I've never really felt like I was much in the loop, even when Bungie was in charge of things. Nobody ever explained to me what was going on in the game.
Really? Like, that's surprising.
All these things, and I had no idea what anything meant.
Did you ever ask them?
Well, on occasion, yes. There was one of the games when I came across zombie killing spree.
Yes.
And I went, wait a minute. So there are zombies in this game? But somebody had said a word to me before we started doing it. And then lines like, blood or whatever it is, brains, that's it. It was like, oh, I get it now. I understand why I'm saying this.
Yeah,
but you know, I didn't, what I was doing was obviously because it was the gameplay part of stuff, it wasn't the cinematics, so I was not a part of the story.
Gotcha.
And in fact, that became sort of odd and interesting for Halo Infinite. We had done it, and I kept hearing very different accounts from different people. It's like, well, you're hardly in the game at all. And I went, really? Because I'd recorded, you know, about as much as I ever did. I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, I did my job. I got paid like I always do. I guess that's the way it's going to be. And I got a call to go in about a year ago. A year ago? It's even more, maybe. And they were doing what they were calling, I think, a chapter, which was they were adding on to Infinite. And it was this thing where this virus AI or something takes me over.
Oh, wow. And interesting.
Yeah, it's out. I mean, I think it's part of the game now, I think. I mean, again, they don't tell me if it happens or not.
Gotcha.
But I heard that. I heard that was there. It's like, oh, okay, that's great. And they said, it was so funny because they said, well, what happens here is this AI is going to basically take over your character. And I went, well, wait a minute. I'm not a character. I'm the announcer. And they went, oh, no, you're a character. You've always been a character. And it's like, really? So after 22 years, I'm finding out that I'm a character. My first thought, I kid you not, was, so when do I get a Funko Pop?
Yeah.
You know? Say, I want a Funko Pop.
That would be incredible. You know, the God from Halo.
What would it be? You know, it'd be this fat, bald, old guy with glasses in front of a microphone. It's like, I'm not with a big head, too. I just don't think that.
No, we'll just put him in Spartan armor. We'll put him in Spartan armor. Yeah, that'll be the Funko Pop.
We'll put you in Jeff.
Occasionally people have done that, which makes me giggle. But so anyway, you know, that was one of the big differences is that at a certain point, I mean, I never felt like, you know, I know Steve and Jen, obviously, because they were a part of the story, knew what was going on. And in fact, I would go out with Jen for coffee or something, as we often do. And she'd talk about the game. And I'd say, well, what's happening in the next one? She said, I can't talk about it. And I said, Jen? No, I can't. And indeed, we do sign NDAs.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't think. But because I have no, you know. The other thing that happened that always used to crack me up was I'd get home from recording and I might mention, you know, someplace that I was recording on the new game or something. And somebody would say, what are some of the things they had you say? And I'd go, I don't remember. And I wasn't kidding. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember anything I said. I was in there for a couple of hours, but I don't know, you know.
So basically, was a typical day of recording for you, was that basically like you just get there, they put you in a booth, and you just start, you know, on a piece of paper, just start spouting out lines?
Yes, that is exactly what it was. The way it used, when it, initially what happened was you go into a room that was about the size of a little bit larger than a closet, but not much. And you'd be standing at a music stand, and all the copy would be on the music stand. And in front of me would be a window. And through the window would be where the engineer and the writer were, I think writer, producer, whichever. And occasionally Marty would pop in and go, hey, and listen to a little bit and then go away. And then afterwards, it was just, you know, the folks who were there for it. And yes, I would go through the lists and we would do like, you know, a section, a sequence of things. And I would do three takes for each phrase or line. So if I was doing Double Kill, which for some reason they had me do every single time we did the game, it's like nothing's changed, I don't think. Well, I think they wanted it to sound like it was all...
like it was happening. New and improved.
I think so.
I actually wanted to ask you about that, though. Because in the earlier games, you sounded different than in the newer games. Why is that?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm not entirely sure. I do know that around the time the 343 came in, the very first session I had with the person who was directing it, they put aside 4 hours and I thought, piece of cake. You know, I was going through those things, you know, most days, like in an hour.
Yeah.
Rare that I never had spent 4 hours there. Well, by the end of that first day of recording, we'd used up all 4 hours and we'd gotten a page and a half done because he was so controlling in his direction that, you know, I couldn't quite get what he was after, that, you know, we kept sort of going over the same lines over and over and over and over and over. Before you know it, 4 hours had passed. They said, can you stay a little longer? And I said, no, I got to pick my kids up from school.
Yeah.
And then the next day I came in, or whenever the next time was that we recorded, and we whipped through the rest of it quite a bit quicker. But there was definitely, I think, a movement to change a little bit of the way the voice worked. It's odd because I'm aware that people have said that, but I can't necessarily explain what it was that changed or why.
So it wasn't you. They asked you to just do it over and over, or they asked you to change it?
Yeah, basically. And it finally got to a point, I can't remember which game it was, but I thought, gosh, this is just so far removed from what I remember us doing in the early games. And I said, would it be possible for me to listen to a little bit of the first game? I feel like I'm kind of losing it. And I only did that so they would hear that what I was trying to do, and they were sort of pulling back on, was what we had once done. But again, I don't know if you guys are necessarily aware of this, but there was a point after the first game came out where there was a serious discussion as to whether they were going to replace all of us.
Really?
Yeah, because the first game was so successful that all of a sudden LA agents were getting in touch with Bungie and Microsoft and saying, Tom Cruise wants to voice Master Chief. And I'm not joking. That happened.
Wow. And
Julia Roberts wants to be Cortana. And it was only Marty going, yeah, it's serious. And only Marty saying, you know what? The reason this game had the impact that it had was because of these people and their performances. I think it'd be a mistake to just toss that out. And in fact, to a certain extent, you know, you look at the TV series, and Pablo Schreiber is an amazing actor.
Oh, he's fantastic.
But choices that were made for him that really, you know, moved away from what Steve had created, I think caused a lot of people to be unhappy with the way the show turned out.
What do you think about the show? Did you watch it?
I did. I did. It was interesting. I kept sort of wondering, who are all these new characters?
I did the same thing.
That were introduced. And it's like, I kind of get, that the story is... This is the other thing about Hale that nobody realizes. It's like, Steve's hardly done any time in the booth. You know, when he does a new game, it's like he's hardly there at all.
Gotcha.
Because Master Chief is, so sort of like Clint Eastwood. He doesn't talk a lot.
Yeah.
that's a good analogy.
That was actually the direction I was given when I first did the audition for Master Chief all the way back in 2001.
Was it Clint Eastwood?
It's like, Clint Eastwood. All right. You know.
He would have been a great Master Chief.
Yeah.
Jeff, he would have been a different Master Chief.
He would have been different. Steve is a great Master Chief. He's fantastic. No,
I'm a big believer in, things work out the way they're supposed to.
I agree.
And I certainly think they did with that. And so as far as the game, the show itself was concerned, it's interesting because I certainly thought that it looked better in the second season than it had in the first. This may or may not make sense because you're all so young, but the first season looked a little Battlestar Galactica, the first version, where everything was clean. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like all the uniform was clean. It's like they're warriors, but they're not getting a lot of blood and dirt all over themselves. And then in the second season, suddenly it was like, oh, we're in the world of Alien. And, which is what it was. Alien, I think, that really introduced sweat and dirt and blood and grime and all that stuff into science fiction. Before that, it looked very, you go back and see things like Logan's Run or a lot of the science fiction from before Alien. And it's like, it's such a difference.
All the Alien movies are so good, though. I love that whole franchise. All the Alien movies, yeah.
And the last one, I was like...
Resurrection.
Yeah, that wasn't the best one.
It's kind of like, they're still going to go after the cat, aren't they? They're going to go after goddamn cat, and then we're all going to be in trouble, and people are going to get eaten, and it's like, all right. But I got to tell you, I was Seattle has this incredible international film festival, the Seattle International Film Festival. And at a certain point, these blockbusters were coming out and they were getting them. And they were like the final film of the series. They were doing like a couple of hundred films, over 6 weeks of this festival, whatever it was. And they always have a big Hollywood blockbuster. So Poltergeist was one. The last two Star Wars movies were both ones that were there. And of course, nobody had been at the first Star Wars movie. I know, because I was at it. And it was like, well, there's nobody here. I wonder if did I make a mistake? At the end of the weekend, that all changed.
When did I'm sorry to interrupt you. When did the first Star Wars come out? When would that have been?
77, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. So I was born in 98 and Nick was born in 95.
Exactly. Well, I've got two kids who are now middle-aged and fabulous people, and when I first showed them Star Wars, they were like, it looks kind of fake. And it's like, don't you dare say
how
that.
Dare you
thought this was the coolest thing we'd ever seen.
You watch your mouth.
But it things had moved so quickly, so fast, that it was like, yeah, I guess I can see that, but I don't know that it's always necessarily for the better. You know what I mean? It's like Alien, most of it was a guy in a suit, or a little audio animatronic puppets.
Yeah.
And yet that film still shocks people who don't know what is going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that now anything is possible. So nothing is kind of magical to me in a weird way.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I'm going to have to at some point, I guess, go see Beetlejuice, because evidently they tried to go back to that aesthetic where it was obviously, puppets and not CGI.
Yeah, I did hear that as well.
So
I heard from a couple people that it wasn't that good, though. You're talking about Beetlejuice too. I heard I want to go see it, but I heard a couple negative reviews. But I don't know.
You know what? It's one of those things where you think, why? Why'd you do that? Why did you do it? Did we need it? It's a very second film. Star Wars is a good example. The first Star Wars movie is perfect. It's perfect.
It's very good.
Perfection. The second film may be greater because it's more ambitious. And, you know, but the first one, it could have ended right there and it would have been great. Perfect. Same thing with Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Could have left it there.
Could have left it right there.
And it's so good because they didn't know, none of the characters knew about each other in the beginning of the movie. And they kind of just all came to this point where, boom, everything, you know, starts happening. I mean, it's genius writing. It was so good.
Absolutely. And again, what you've got going is that nobody knows what's going to work and what isn't going to work. Well, after you've got one out or two out or six out, you think, okay, this is what works. This is what they expect. This is the kind of, you know, film it's going to be. And it all gets sort of put together based on earlier incarnations of the franchise, which doesn't mean it's all. And then, you know, then suddenly something will come along that, again, is new and fresh, and people will be blown away by it, you know. So it's interesting. I don't begrudge Michael Keaton anything. I think he's absolutely a genius.
Oh, yeah.
And it's bought him, you know, the opportunity to do a lot more movies. But films like Spotlight or the Bird movie, what was that called? That incredible film where he played a superhero. It was all done like in one long shot.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't remember what it's called either.
I can't think what the name of the film is. Birdman? Something like that.
Birdman.
Anyway, it was, you know, he's so good. So incredible. And, you know, somebody wants to buy him a new house. It's like, fine, go for it. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not going to object. But it's like with a lot of those people, you think it's just a fact of life. You know, you think, well, why aren't they just, it's so great when they were going out and always trying to do new and more interesting things. And then at a certain point, you know, you've done a lot and you've got other life concerns. You know, you've kind of gotten probably farther than you ever anticipated. Look at De Niro. You know, when he was a young actor, it's like every single performance was like, where is he coming from this time? You know, just amazing. And he's still a great, great actor.
Amazing actor.
Like, you know, now he's a lot of what he's doing. It's like he's got a lifestyle to maintain and he's got the film festival that, you know, he's sort of bankrolling, I think, on his own. And, you know, he's an amazing person. And also, you know, you got to get the scripts. You know, somebody has to send you something that's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to sort of go, well, nobody may like me in this, but I've got to do it, you know.
So. Was there any pre-reading that you did to get in? Speaking of characters, is there any pre-readings that you did to get into the Halo franchise? Or was it, like you said, it was just literally your agent called you and said, hey, you're going to be on a game.
They were, well, after I'd done the audition, yeah. I mean, I had to audition like everybody else in Seattle, and happily for me, they chose me. But no, there was nothing to see.
Gotcha.
You know, as I say, it's like I didn't know until I went in to record the first game, and they sat me down, and they sort of gave me this, you know, very quick rundown of sort of what was going on in the game, and it was like, okay. You know, I saw Master Chief. I'm not even sure I saw Cortana at that point.
Gotcha.
I saw the Halo ring off in the distance. And part of what they were showing me was to show me, isn't this cool how hyper real this is compared to what was happening at the time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people started to get kind of more and more 3D about games, you know, I can remember I had two kids, as I say, who both played games. And, you know, when you're playing Mario Brothers and it's all like, you know, you're going along like this,
yeah,
you know, pointing in one direction. And then suddenly they're in 3D and they're going all over the place and it's more like a movie, you know. Halo was like that. I don't think it was the first film that was quite that hyper-real. I think, first game. The first game was probably Myst. Have you ever heard of that game?
Myst.
Myst. M-Y-S-T.
Yep.
Yeah. Extraordinary game. It really haunted me. Because you're dropped into this setting with no orientation whatsoever. And you've got to figure out where you are, what's going on, and where you need to go. So it's like a nightmare. It's very spooky.
I do actually remember that one.
I actually don't know what Myst is. I'll have to show you that.
It's an older game. Actually, funny story, my dad used to play that. There was two games that he used to play. Quake and Myst the two games. Yeah. Quake was amazing. Like, you know, that was like pre-Halo, obviously. And
Quake was Halo before Halo. Right?
Literally. Yeah. Well, to a degree, to a degree, yes.
Absolutely.
So next question, since we're moving along. So
am I answering all your questions? I
know you're doing wonderful.
Fantastic.
Like, you know, it looked great the second season, but I guess it's not going forward, or maybe it is. You know,
I heard that the guy who directed The Dark Knight is picking it up.
Christopher Nolan?
Now, I don't know if that's true. I heard that.
I have no idea.
But I don't know if it's true yet. But I did read that he's interested in picking it up. And I think he's going to take it to Amazon Prime with his brother, who's directing Fallout Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I don't know for sure, but I didn't know if you might have heard anything about that.
Not a thing.
Gotcha.
They did not ask me to be a part of that. And I thought, well, but wouldn't it be easy enough to make me like Whoopi Goldberg and Star Trek? I'm just a bar fly in some, you know, galactic bar somewhere.
They should have done that.
Master Chief and, you know.
That would have been really cool.
You go out there and be killed.
That would have been great.
The first battle they should have scene done that. Of the Halo series.
I thought
series.
It would have been great too, but of course nobody asked me and didn't pursue it. But
they actually did that in Marvel with what's his name? The guy who wrote created like Spider-Man and Superman.
Oh,
Stan Lee.
Yeah, Stan Lee.
They did it with Stan Lee. Why can't they do it with
well, I didn't create it, but yeah, Stan Lee was what a character. Yeah.
Like, just have Jeff at a bar.
I'm very excited for Fantastic Four because I owned the very first two issues of that comic series.
Very
That's
nice.
How old I am.
Wow.
How did you feel, speaking of that, since you brought it up, how do you feel about Robert Downey Jr. going from Iron Man to Doctor Doom?
Well, that sort of goes along with what we were saying. I think that there is a bit of a sense of, you know, the for the whole first Infinity Saga thing, I don't think, I could be wrong, I sort of got the idea that at a certain point they went, you know what, we could tie all of these things together. You know, maybe they had the idea from the very beginning. Maybe everything was that well thought through, perhaps. But even so, now they've been through one whole saga. It's an extraordinary achievement. It's 23 films.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's like 60 hours of movies.
Right.
I'll say, you ever tried to watch every Marvel movie in one day? You can't do it.
It would take you a couple weeks.
No way.
It would take you weeks to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, what they did was, I think, rather extraordinary. Their success rate was just unbelievable. I mean, nobody has the kind of success they have. And, you know, something like Ant-Man comes along, and I'm thinking, Ant-Man? You know, I remember that when it was out. It was like, you know, Ant-Man only if you couldn't get something you wanted to really read. But then I went and saw it, and it's like, Paul Rudd. Well, that's a good start.
Yeah,
you know, he's
really, it's like, well, that's pretty smart, too. You know, they were just, they seemed to like make great decisions all the way down the road. And then now with the multiverse saga and all the problems they've had with, like, you know, Jonathan, what's his name? Kang.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I mean, you know, I feel badly for everybody, actually. It's just, it's such a, I don't, that kind of stuff. You know, I'm not one of those people who delights in other people's misfortunes, and it's just horrible. You know, it's horrible what he did, and it's horrible that it's had the kind of consequences.
Wait, what did he do?
Well, he was apparently abusive in relationships.
Yes.
Wait, who is this again? I actually don't know about this.
You didn't hear about this? Yeah,
it's the guy who played Kang, Jonathan, the black actor who played Kang.
Oh.
King the Conqueror. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, the minute they went in and he was, I think he lost a court case and, you know, Marvel immediately fired him. And of course, they've had to then rethink everything. And I think, you know, I think Robert Downey Jr. is very, very good. Very, very good. And I suspect that they will have some ideas. There are an awful lot of smart people working on this.
I agree.
You know, the Russo brothers going to be involved in it. And so it's like, I guess we'll just need to wait and see. I don't, you know, it's interesting because you think about Lucas, when Lucas was just starting out and nobody knew who he was and he did Star Wars. And then suddenly he was a known quantity. You know, so where do you go from there? Walt Disney was that way as well. At a certain point, it's like, how do you top yourself? Do you try to top yourself every time out? I mean, Pixar.
That's a good point.
You know, all those different things. It's like we kind of know, or we think we know what we're going to get, you know, and do they play into that and give us what they think we want? Or do they go now for something entirely different? Because sometimes when they do that, the Eternals being a good example, a lot of people were like, no, we don't want this. And it's like, well, I don't know.
I actually did go to see Eternals in the movie theater. I thought it was okay. There were some elements to it that were strange. But I mean, I thought it was a good movie, you know, nonetheless. I think they always make, you know, pretty good movies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a bad day for Marvel is a pretty good day for anybody else.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But you know, yeah, what the hell? They've certainly earned the right to let Robert down, and he's earned the right to play Doctor Doom.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Have you ever thought about throwing in your hat in the bucket with like Marvel or anything? I think your voice would be great to play some kind of like alien invader and Marvel. I don't know what character you could like voice, but I think that would be awesome, in my opinion.
I don't know. I'm here and obviously very available.
we'll make sure this goes viral so that they know.
This is something else that I think there's a wonderful woman named Jen Rudin. Jen was in charge of casting for Disney for a period of time when they were doing The Incredibles and The Princess and the Frog and, you know, a bunch of these films. And then she was hired to go to New York. She'd been in L.A. She was hired to go to and had been an actress herself. She was hired to go to New York and take over casting for Disney theatricals. She cast me in Mary Poppins.
Oh, okay.
She's the one that they had me brought in to audition for that. So she had a course that she was teaching at a place called Actors Connection on voice acting for animation, because my New York agents, who are different than the agents I've had here, have been sending me a lot of auditions for animated things. And I thought, well, I don't know if am I doing okay? They keep sending me stuff. I think they're pretty happy, but I thought I should maybe, you know, I've got the time. I should maybe take a class. And when I saw Jen was teaching a class, I thought, well, she'll have good things to say. Well, I thought she's never going to remember me. She remembered me right off the bat. She said, I was so excited when I saw that you were on the list of people. And it was like, okay. but she said a really interesting thing. What's happened, and it's in her book as well, Confessions of a Casting Director, terrific book. One of the things she talks about is the huge explosion of getting famous people into animated features. Generally, these are not people who would at one time have had any interest in being in a cartoon movie. You know, if you go back to classic Disney, and I'm talking about Pinocchio, Snow White, Cinderella, you'd never know who the actors were in those films. I know some of them because they were radio people, some of them,
gotcha.
You know, or vaudeville performance. But, and then suddenly in the 60s, Disney introduced, well, let's have Phil Harris, who is a popular radio entertainer, come in and play Baloo the Bear, you know, or George Sanders, who was a wonderful actor in film. He was in, you know, all sorts of terrific things, Rebecca, Hitchcock's film, and tons of good things. and make him Shere Khan and Peter Ustinov. And suddenly you were getting like famous names. And I think the thinking was it'll help sell the cartoon. Well, now that's huge. I mean, you know, most of the people who are doing that kind of work are names, you know, even if they're doing characters. I mean, it's like, if you didn't know that Bradley Cooper was doing Rocket, you know, I don't think there'd be any way you would know. He's doing a great job. But I don't listen to that and go, oh, that's Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, I never would have guessed that. I was also going to ask you, do you feel famous? Do people ever walk up to you and they're like, oh my gosh, Jeff Stitzer? No?
I don't think of myself as famous.
Well, you are. Well, your voice is famous, at least.
Yes, I know. And I understand that. And I understand that it has been heard over the course of 23 years. We just had an anniversary a couple of weeks ago.
That is right. That is right.
But it's like, you know, I still am looking for work. I still have to make rent. I got to fix my own supper, you know.
Yeah.
Got to do my laundry. It's like, I'm not famous the way a lot of people are famous, which is fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, at a certain point in anyone's career, you sort of have to go, what do I want? What am I looking for? And for me, I just wanted to keep working. Did I have to have the lead every time out? Not at all. You know, if I was with a good group of people enjoying myself, that was great. You know, did it matter what theater I directed at? Not necessarily. If the play was good and I could get a good cast together and the money was reasonable, you know, I've worked for a lot of money and I've worked for a little money. The weird thing about voice acting is I was in Hartford, Connecticut, playing a supporting role in the musical Kiss Me, Kate at the Hartford stage with a lot of Broadway people who were, and again, just mind-blowingly talented. And I got a call from Seattle saying they want you to do some revisions on the work you did for Halo Infinite, was it? I can't remember which one it was. And I said, okay. And they said, so they want you to go to this studio and, you know, you'll do it there. So I got the car that I shared with two other actors and I drove myself and parked and went to this door and it didn't look like anybody was there. But then this guy wandered out and he was the engineer and he was very nice and he knew who I was and somewhat effusive. And so we went back in and I put on headphones and the people, you know, from across the country did the session and it took 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Now, I was paid for that 15 minutes more than I made working for 2 months in a play.
Oh, wow. That show. Yeah. That's...
So it's like, you know, that's just the reality of what that is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I have the least time in is this Netflix movie I mentioned earlier, Metal Lords, it's called. I mean, literally, you could easily not even notice I was in it. And I was paid more money in that than I would be paid for a half year's work as an actor on stage.
Was that voice acting or did you actually show up?
No, I'm actually on screen.
Oh, really? We're going to have to check that out.
We're going to have to check that out.
Yeah, is it out now?
Oh, I think it's still up there.
Metal Lords,
the
okay.
The only person you might recognize is, did you see Defending Jacob on Apple TV with Chris Evans?
I did, actually.
The young kid in that who then showed up in Knives Out and has done some other film, really talented. In fact, he was in the last episode of Barry, playing Barry's son, when he was a high school student. Extremely.
Barry is the show about the serial killer who's like an actor. I love that show. That's like one of my favorite shows. That was
who's
the actor?
It did. This isn't fun anymore.
It got very serious. Yeah.
Yeah. Bill Hader's impressive.
Yeah. Bill Hader.
But that kid was, you know, in the movie and he's wonderful in it, but I'm barely there. But I made more money than I would have in a half year of doing theater, at least.
That just blows my mind, honestly.
Yeah, Netflix is you know, probably a place to go.
It really is,
right?
So I do.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. See, the thing is that before the streaming services, if you did a TV series or a movie or something like that, you tended to get paid much better residuals.
Right, because they would replay.
It's hard for them to know exactly, you know, what part of somebody's subscription ended up, you know, supporting this one project. You get paid significantly less.
Oh, gotcha. Wow.
But it's okay. It's like, you know, I'm practically retired.
Gotcha.
So we're coming up on our time here. We have a couple more questions for you. This one is kind of I just thought of this actually. Sure. So we're, you know, trying to enter the entertainment business with a podcast.
Right.
Would you have any like advice for us for like networking or, you know, how to go about doing this? This just came to me. I don't know why I thought to ask you, but.
I, you know what? I know so little about podcasting. I've only done like six or something. And people say, well, why haven't you done more? It's like, nobody asked. Now people are asking and it's like, sure, of course I'll be happy to do it.
Yeah.
But I don't know a lot about it or where to go. Let me give that some thought because I know there are people who teach courses on it. And I don't think it's a bad idea to maybe, this is what I do. It's like, you know, when I got interested in audiobooks, I took classes, you know, from people who did audiobooks.
Yeah.
Thinking that not only can they give me tips, but they might also help connect me to audiobook producers. And it seems to me that if there's somebody out there who is doing a good course on becoming a podcaster, and it might, you know, entail looking around a little bit, and you're going to have to pay some money, I would imagine, for a good course. They might also then be in a position, if they look at you and go, oh, this is good what they're doing, you know, to say, well, you should check in with this person or that person or whatever. Yeah, that would be my sort of immediate advice. But let me do some thinking, because there was a period of time when I was thinking about trying to do a podcast, but it was sort of not really a podcast. I was developing an idea of doing dramatizations of children's stories. And I thought, well, how am I going to release those? And I thought, well, maybe as a sort of in a podcast format.
If you did a podcast, you would instantly have thousands of people that would be interested in what you had to say, because so many people know, they're like familiar with your voice, and you had such an impact on, you know, people's childhoods. We heard your, you know, we've heard Double Kill and all of that over and over for so long.
I heard your voice more than my own father's, to be quite honest. No, that's an over-exaggeration. Oh, that's a clear exaggeration.
Oh, my God.
That's a clear exaggeration.
Like, and, of course, my first thought is, unbelievable. Where were your parents?
No, he has really great parents. Don't listen to him. No, he has great parents.
That's a total joke. That's a total joke.
Totally understand. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm on TikTok now because somebody said the same thing. It's like, oh, man, a lot of people are going to want to hear what you have to say on TikTok. And it's like, okay. So I've been trying that. And, you know, it's been kind of fun. And I think I've got like almost 43,000 followers. And somebody then came out and burst my bubble and said, how come you even got more? It's like,
43,000. We would love to have that. We would love, like, if you can get that many subscribers on YouTube, you know, you can bring in a decent
income.
They
weren't subscribers, they were followers, and that's different.
Right, right. But I'm saying if you did bring it to YouTube or like another platform, I think that would be, you know, great, but that's just my opinion.
Part of it is here's a couple of issues. Number one, and I said this on my very first TikTok. I said, you know, I happen to be talking to the brother of one of my agents who works with CelebWorks, which is the group that I'm with for conventions and appearances and things like that. And he said, you really ought to be doing TikToks, because I had just done a new website. And I said, I just don't know how to get people to go to the website. And he said, well, you should go on TikTok and let people know you've got this, because people would go crazy if you were on TikTok. And I thought, really? You know, again, you talk about, do you feel famous? No, I don't feel famous. And the first TikTok, I said, this guy suggested I should do it. And I said, okay. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, I'm going to have to do something, right? I mean, I can't just sort of show up and go, I don't know, what do you want to talk about? Although I've certainly done that. And I thought, well, I know a lot of people like to hear expressions said in the Halo voice, so I'll do that, which is what I'm doing on TikTok. And then after a certain point, people were asking questions like, how do you get into voiceover? Or, you know, what's your favorite game? Or some of the things you've asked. And I thought, Well, maybe what I'll do is I'll answer a question and then do requests.
Very nice.
And then I thought, well, I could also, people are asking, you know, what else have you done? And like you, they didn't think I had a career except for Halo. And in fact, it's fairly extensive. So I thought, well, I'll tell stories about my career.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. So that's I've been doing all those things in the TikToks, which are a little long.
People love hearing that stuff. They you know, they're driving to work. They like to hear, you know, things about people that they find interesting. You know, obviously you had a big part in Halo. Anyone who's a nerd like myself, I mean, I would eat that up, you know, all the time.
Oh, I'd listen to it every day.
Did you have one?
Well, I've been doing it 5 days a week. I'm cutting it down in the immediate future because I've got a big project that I'm working on at home. And
gotcha.
Well, but we'll see. I mean, I thought about YouTube at one point. I thought, well, I could do a YouTube thing. And I'm sort of now, it's like anything, you know, or a podcast. It's like any of those things. A part of me is going, what would I do? You know, what would justify doing it? And the idea of doing this podcast of dramatizations of children's stories, new ones with like sound effects and music,
that could be funny.
It could be great.
Yeah.
And but it would also take a lot of time. And even with the TikTok, it's like, oh my God, I've got to go do my TikTok.
We actually feel the same way sometimes. We're like, oh, we have to edit this whole episode and upload it. And
you're editing your stuff. Me, it's kind of like I'm just filming it and going,
here you go.
I'm not doing all the things. You know, I watch some of these TikToks. And it's like, look at all the amazing things they're doing.
Dude, they're like making movies.
Little people are walking through the screen. It's like, how do they even do that?
They're making like movie quality, like 1 minute videos.
Totally.
And I actually never had TikTok. I never had social media and I didn't care for it. But because of this podcast, I've had to care about it and go on it. And it's like new, I'm young. But even it's new for me because I'm just not that type of person. I never cared to be popular.
I have to say, I'm a sucker for videos about babies. I, you know, as a dad.
I'm a dad too. I just had a baby a year ago.
Did you?
Yeah. I have a 1 year old.
The best.
Yeah. No, he's great. Bad. And he just started walking.
It's like, no. Okay. I'm going to tell you something and then I can answer your questions if I have to. but I want to give my advice, and that is I hope have got a notebook and a working writing utensil that you keep with you at all times, because even though he's a little young now, right, and you can get pictures of him, there is going to come a time, and you see this in some of these baby videos, where he will open his mouth and say something that will blow your mind. It's like, how do you know? You're an ancient one in the body of a 2-year-old. It's like, what?
No,
and you've got to write it down because you're going to think that's so incredible. I'll never forget it. And a week later, you will have.
My baby's name is Luca, and he'll say like mama and dada. And, you know, he's starting to talk, but he's a very serious baby. It actually makes me laugh. He'll just stare off, and he's very, like stoic and serious. And I'm like, that's me, in a way, because I could be like that,
too. Copy-paste you, literally.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly, I mean, that's really a lot of what happens with kids. Congratulations. I adore children so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So one last question, you know, just get it out of the way, because I definitely want to know about this with all of your famous lines that you've done in the Halo series. And this may be a shot in the dark. Are there any voice lines that you did that you really liked that didn't make the final cut?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any examples?
Yes. One of them I can't say because they didn't put it in the game. And it's sort of a variation on "you stink."
Okay.
Only it's not stink.
But it's like, I see.
Anyway, so I try not to say that, although it really bums me out because when I said it really well.
Yeah.
And then they said, no, they was vetoed by the people up above. And it's like, who are these people?
Get them on the phone. I want to have a word with them.
The story I love to tell because nobody's come after me yet, but I went in to record for one of the games and I can't remember even which one it was. And somebody, this was right around the time that Vice President Dick Cheney had gone hunting and accidentally shot
that guy
in the face. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh,
this is true. This happened. Mm-hmm. And so I came in to do some recording, and one of the lines, they said, okay, Jeff, we want you to say this line. And it was a line that you were going to hear me say, not every time, because they wanted to kind of make it a bit more of an Easter egg and bury it a little bit, and maybe Microsoft wouldn't notice. But anytime you ended up accidentally shooting one of your own team members, you would hear me go, Cheney Mania!
No way! Yeah, that's absolutely incredible.
That's great.
I know. And then when the game came out, and it's like, it's not in the game. It's like, what do you mean it's not in the game? Well, it was like somebody thought it would be, you know.
Well, it's not really PC.
That makes me upset. Yeah.
I don't know. That would just be my guess for it. But yeah,
I'm sure that's probably true. I mean, some of the other things that, you know, ended up in the game, it's like, oh, okay. But I love that. It's my favorite line. It always makes me laugh. And the day we did it, they made me do it over and over again. Not because I needed to. They just loved to hear it. And it made us all laugh.
It's very funny. It's good.
Yeah, it is very, very funny.
So it's really been a pleasure speaking to you. And you know, thank you so much for your time. It means the world to us.
My pleasure. I appreciate it. This is a good thing to keep in mind. Always ask. Always ask. Anybody you want to talk to, always ask.
Okay.
The worst that can happen is they'll say, sorry, no, or I haven't got time, or, you know, like that. Always asked. I would say that more often than not, people are very open to being contacted about talking about whatever you want to hear.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, Jeff, once again, we want to thank you so much for your time today. It has been more than an honor to talk with you and have you on our show with us today. But before you go, I just need one thing. I need one thing. Can I get a running riot?
Sure. Running Riot.
That's my favorite one right there, dude. That's my favorite one right there.
I've been doing cameos, which I also do earlier today, so my voice is a little.
No, you're good. It was still fantastic. We'll also
Riot.
Yeah.
There you go. That's good.
We're gonna also put the link to your cameo down in the link in the description below. Right. But again, Jeff, once again, thank you so much for your time today. And everybody, thank you so much for watching the Eagle Boys podcast. And once again, let's give it up for Jeff Stitzer for being with us today. Jeff, you have yourself a fantastic day, and we're looking forward to seeing you at the Columbus Convention, November, what you said?
Org Gaming, the 2nd and 3rd of November.
2nd and 3rd of November.
It's Org Gaming Expo. I think that's what it's called, in Columbus, Ohio.
In Columbus, Ohio. We will definitely be looking into that, and we'll probably be paying you a visit up there to say what's up.
I was in Cleveland a year ago.
For a gaming convention?
Yeah.
That's a little far. So Cleveland is northern Ohio. We're at the very southern tip. So that would be like 4.5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like Columbus to us is about an hour, whereas like Cleveland's about 3 hours.
Gotcha. Yep. Cool.
Well, anyway, again, everybody, thank you so much for watching. Thank you, Jeff, for being on the show. Be sure to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel and check the link in the description below for Jeff Stitzer's cameo, as well as many other links to different types of content that we put on here. Thank you, everybody, again, so much for watching. We will see you in the next episode.